Hey, Nick.
Hey, John.
I broke your Legos.
Oh, God, no. I was saving those.
Well, I'm a Blockbuster, and this is Stranger Still.
Stranger Still,
an audio experience.
That's a much better way to put it. You know, podcasts has just become so
2002. Mm-hmm.
Like, people have stuck their flag in that,
you know.
Like, we've got Stuff You Should Know, we've got WTF with Marc Maron. Those are podcasts. We are an audio experience.
Uh-huh.
Like a Disney ride for your ears,
featuring me, John Deegan,
and me, Nick Wood. This might be a little bit of a goofy episode, which is funny because we just got a review where the people said we aren't goofy.
Uh-huh.
And they thought we were going to be. But I'm on vacation. When our listeners are listening to this, I am on vacation. And so while we're recording this, I'm on the very precipice of vacation.
Ooh, fancy.
Vacation starts in about 13 hours for me. We will hit the road and we will be going to Minnesota.
Don't you know?
Don't you know?
Why? Why do they do that? Tell us.
We had an episode on accents. Just go.
Why do they say don't you know?
Because I want to know if you know or not.
Okay.
Don't you know?
What are we talking about?
Well, I'm in the state of relaxation, just ready to go up to the Great North, spend some time on the lake, maybe do some boating. But the only thing I think that's more ubiquitous with summer...
Very fancy again.
...than vacations. This is the episode of Big Words. The only thing more ubiquitous than vacations when it comes to summer is summer blockbusters.
That's right.
That's right. And that's what we're talking about today, Jonathan.
Yep.
This is kind of like outside of our wheelhouse, because this is like back to our roots when we just talked about whatever we wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now we're just conspiracy theories and dumb science stuff. This is like, it's not science-y, but it is still really weird.
It's social science-y.
It is social science. Yeah, that's a good one. Because we're going to be talking about where the Blockbuster came from and how summer Blockbusters, not the movie rental store that's now obsolete.
I thought that we might have been talking about that until 30 seconds ago, maybe. So.
No, we're not going to talk about it at all.
Okay.
So anytime I say Blockbuster, it is not the store.
TM.
It is summer Blockbuster movies. Summer Blockbusters are an industry now. And it has, I mean, one movie basically shaped how our entire movie experience goes now.
Yeah. Wasn't it that movie Mouth with the Fish?
It was Mouth with the Fish. It wasn't Mouth with the Fish, but it was Jaws with the Shark.
Okay.
We'll get there. You're getting ahead of us.
I guess I saw the bootleg Mouth. Wasn't so good.
I saw
very gummy.
That was something entirely different.
Yeah, it was.
Can you imagine a time where during the summer people would like go outside on purpose?
Can you put like a harp noise here and we can imagine together?
Let's just make the harp noise because I'm on vacation. I don't want to be editing in harp noises.
You're gonna put it in. Okay, I imagined it. Now what?
There was this weird time before 1975, and yes, I'm putting a year on it, where, that's right, people would go to the pools, they would go to the park and have picnics with their families, they would go to the beach and swim, they would go fishing, they would go hiking, they would, like, instead of being inside where the AC is, they would remove themselves from that, go outside.
Mm.
How weird.
So...
How obtuse.
Away from the AC. It sounds very hot and sweaty, dude.
Yeah, it does.
It sounds like...
Like today. Netflix
and sweat, you know? Which people don't do very often.
I don't know if Netflix was invented back in 1975.
But Blockbuster was, which is what we're going to talk about. Blockbuster Video, the company.
No, it wasn't around. Well, it would have been, I don't know, when Blockbuster formed. I don't really care. It's not what we're talking about today. Up until 1975, movies were a winter thing. And still in like the late 70s, there's some of the big movies that we know and love came out in the winter. But pretty much the only time you'd go see a movie in the summer was at a drive-in movie or a drive-in theater, which, as you and I both know, are no longer a thing. But in the 50s and 60s, they really hit their peak. Like, everyone was going to these things. It was a cool thing to do, a nice place to go smooch your loved one.
Mm-hmm.
maybe do some naughty things that we won't talk about on this podcast.
Drinking?
Drinking soda pops and not brushing your teeth.
What?
I know. But by the 70s, like, they only lasted 20 years, and by the 70s, they're already at a sharp decline. And that's really important because by the mid-70s, 1975 specifically, pretty much no one was watching movies in the summer. Like, it was, theaters feared the summer because so few patrons came and watched movies.
Yeah. But.
But
speaking of patrons,
yeah,
patreon.com/strangerstill.
Nice, it's a good plug. Jerk. I want to spend a little time with drive-ins because I learned a lot. Like, this episode might not be in our normal wheelhouse, but we're gonna explore a ton of stuff, dude.
Okay,
we're gonna explore Benjamin Franklin.
I love him.
We're gonna explore drive-ins.
Love it more
in depth.
Yeah,
we're gonna explore merchandising strategies.
Yep. Into it.
Yeah. But this is one where I wanted a super light topic just to, like, go into vacation. I started researching it, and I have, like, almost more notes than I usually have on a normal topic.
Also, this seems like it's a very American thing.
Yeah.
And this is going to come out on the 4th of July.
It is. Mm-hmm. You're right. Happy 4th of July, everyone.
Yeah.
I wish I knew that because I would have said that up top.
You done did it.
You done did it. So, drive-ins. Let's start there, because this has actually a lot to do with blockbusters. Nowadays, drive-in movies are just novelty, but if you're a kid, and maybe you've heard the term drive-in before, and you don't actually know what it is, it was this...
I can explain.
Okay, go for it.
So, you know when you go to, like, Taco Bell, and it's really late?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you drive through. Well, they used to have a little screen, so you would just park by, like, a window, mm-hmm. and you'd look through the window from your car, mm-hmm. and you'd watch a two-hour film. While the cars behind you
at
waited.
At Taco Bell?
And then they would move forward. No, yeah. It would be like a movie establishment. They would just have windows for people. Usually wait in line for 10, 12 hours a day just to see a little glimpse, you know? That's how things were back then.
That's exactly how it was.
Okay.
In reality, there was this big open plain where people would drive up and park, and then there was this huge screen at the front of this field where they would project a movie onto it. It's pretty simple. But you had to have a car to go there. And they were, in the 50s and 60s, they were famous for being makeout spots. And a lot of parents and grandparents and old people, I can say old people because I'm a parent, thought nice. That drive-ins were gross and seedy places where bad things happened.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing, though, is as drive-ins started to decline throughout the 70s, they started showing, like, exploitation films and pornography to offset the poor ticket sales, which only, it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because then now they are nothing but seedy establishments.
Yeah.
So that kind of put a nail in the coffin. The whole concept of a drive-in is, like, doomed from the start, because it's completely dependent on good weather.
Yeah.
If you get rained on, you can't project onto the screen, or if a tornado comes careening through.
Nah, you just gotta market it better. You make it like an IMAX interactive twister. Come see the movie. Raining in the parking lot.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
We should capitalize on that.
Or Sin City, isn't it constantly raining?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. If I remember one thing about that movie, it's the rain.
Yeah. Good weather in that city.
Yeah.
Good town. They must have very good plant life.
It's basically a rainforest in that city.
Well, their roses are red, right?
Yeah.
So everything else is black and white.
Yeah. Except for the yellow man.
Yeah, he's gross, dude.
He is gross. Was it in the comic or... Never mind. That was going to go down an inappropriate route that we don't talk about on this show. So one more nail in the coffin was there was a steep increase of the housing prices in the 70s. Like, I found some figures here that in the 60s, the median house price was $16,500. By the 70s, inflation had gone up like 5%, which was a lot for just 10 years, and almost doubled the housing prices. So by the 70s, the median house price was $26,600.
Jesus.
So that was up by 60%, just the median price.
I'm drooling. That sounds
you
awesome.
Wish that you could pay that much for a house, right? So all that is to say that it wasn't financially feasible to have this huge plot of land that only got used in the summer, especially when ticket sales were so low. Also in the 70s, we got color TVs, we also got VHS tapes, and eventually video rental stores, and that certainly didn't do the drive-in theater business any favors. But John, the last thing that put drive-ins 6 feet under was daylight savings.
Oh, well.
What did you think I was going to say?
Blockbuster Video.
No, daylight savings ruined drive-in theaters. Well, it didn't, like, there's a bunch of other stuff that contributed to it, but it had a lot to do with this, and I got to take another quick diversion here because I went down this weird rabbit hole and blew my own mind. And I'm sure someone out there is like, oh, Nick, you're so stupid. I can't believe you didn't know this. But
you sound just like you.
It's like I'm listening into a mirror. That's not my joke. I stole it. But John, quickly, who proposed
Benjamin Franklin?
Wrong.
You mentioned him earlier, Nick.
Right? But everyone thinks that it was Ben Franklin that came up with daylight savings.
But you said that you...
Because I am going to debunk this myth that Ben Franklin invented daylight savings.
Did he really do anything?
No. The whole...
Did he just steal everything?
No, that was the other guy.
Ben Franklin invented... Who?
What? Thomas Edison stole everything.
Oh, yeah, he invented plagiarism. That's the one thing he invented.
Another person. No, the person that came up with the idea of daylight savings was this New Zealander named George Hudson. I guess that name's not as memorable, otherwise he'd be on our $100 bill. He proposed daylight savings in 1895, and around then several countries implemented it, and the whole Ben Franklin misconception came about because he wrote a satirical piece which basically made fun of people that were like, oh my god, we're running low on candles and energy and stuff, and I can't get up on time, and there's not enough time in the day to do all the farming. He wrote this piece just to be like, dude, our clock system is just completely made up. Just move your clock forward an hour.
Oh, jeez, man.
Idiots.
So Ben wrote an Onion article.
Exactly. And that's exactly what it is. Yeah. But John, when did the U.S. widely adopt daylight savings similar to how it is today?
Probably not that long ago, Nicholas.
Not that long ago.
Only in ancient Egypt.
That's not in this episode. They didn't have drive-ins or anything in when we're talking.
Can't prove it.
Dude, I guess I wasn't born until 91, so I didn't grow up with this, but...
You missed the 80s, bud. I was born in 89.
Well, even the 80s would have missed out on this. I had no clue that the U.S. had started adopting daylight savings in the 60s and 70s. That recent.
Yeah.
Like, in my dad's lifetime, they changed the clocks an hour.
Hey, time's different now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Have a good day, everyone.
But the reason that this happened was because in the 70s there was an energy crisis, and so people wanted to use less electricity and conserve energy. But part of this resulted in daylight savings, which meant that movie times couldn't be shown until like 8, 9, or even 10 at night when it was dark enough to see the projector, so people just stopped going.
Oh,
by the time
man.
The movie's done, it's midnight and you're falling asleep in your car.
Yeah.
Drive-ins. At this point, they are dead. Which I went through that whole rigmarole just to say that...
Rigor mortis, you mean?
Rigor mortis. This autopsy of drive-ins, just to say that this has paved the way for the summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
The year.
Mouth of Fish.
No, I don't want to...
My favorite film.
I'm just going to keep moving. The year is 1975.
Yes.
The movie that changed it all.
Dun it.
Was Jaws.
That's the Mouth of Fish theme song. I bought it on a DVD box.
Well,
from a guy on the street corner.
You could have just said that that's the James Bond theme and Jaws was in, it's not the theme, but it's one of the songs.
I'll write my jokes, you write yours.
Okay. Because we write all of our jokes ahead of time. Sometimes I do. You don't.
Do you?
Well, sometimes I'm like, this will be funny, and I put it in my notes.
Nice.
So Jaws, are you aware of this movie?
Yeah.
Tell our audience about this movie.
Okay.
In case you're like 2 years old and you have never seen Jaws.
Okay. So back in the
75s,
people used to go to the beach.
They used
but
to.
It wasn't scary enough. So
some crazy man.
A director.
I thought you were going to say deranged
Steven
man.
Spielman decided that he wanted to make this beach scary again.
Yeah.
So he made a movie called Mouth the Fish, and it swallowed up all the patrons. .com/strangerstill.
Stop it! Oh, God. Okay, so Jaws is a movie about a giant shark that is terrorizing this small little town. And it stars Richard Dreyfuss, Roy Scheider. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. Maybe I should look that up if I was a professional, but I'm not. And Robert Shaw. It was based on a novel of the same name by Peter Benchley. And it was directed, like you said, by Steven Spielberg. And I was interested to find out, this kind of catapulted him into stardom. Prior to Jaws, he had directed 2 theatrical films and 3 direct-to-TV films.
Mm-hmm.
So he had little experience. He'd done some short films, and he this movie was just like so huge for him that now everyone knows who Steven Spielberg is.
Yeah.
And now we have Animaniacs because of it. That's what this whole episode about is about, is that we got Animaniacs thanks to Steven Spielberg.
Wacky, Zacky, and Dot or something.
Yep, those are the names. Wacky, Zacky, and Dot. Jacko, Wacko, and Dot. Ding dong. So, Steven Spielberg.
So he put the big fish on the TVs.
He made this movie, just this small little $9 million movie.
Small loan of $9 million.
Yeah. And now we have summer blockbusters to thank for it.
Yeah.
So Jaws was released on June 20th of 1975. We just missed its anniversary, which I found out while researching this. So right in the middle of the summer, where normally it would have been doomed to fail. If there's like, hey, this movie's coming out, come see it. Like 10 people would have showed up.
Oh, but it was so marketable because all the theaters can put little signs that say, we're going to need a bigger soda, and then sell them. Upsell them, you know?
Yeah, I hate you. So Universal threw everything that they had at this movie to make it successful. And I don't want... The whole reason I set up the drive-in movie stuff, all that stuff, was just to say that this was a huge risk for them at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the marketing executives at Universal originally picked to release the movie in the summer because they wanted to capitalize on when people would be going to the beaches and terrorize them off the beaches into the movie theater.
Oh,
and it worked.
That's amazing.
Like, against all odds, it freaking worked. And they threw $1.8 million in advertising, which in today's money, that only comes out to $8.5 million. And compared to today's spending on advertisement, that's almost nothing. The last report was in 2007. The average amount spent on movie or advertising per movie was $36 million. So it's like, what, a fourth of that?
That's amazing.
That.
And that marketing is genius, too. I feel like, and now I gotta want to pitch a Netflix original movie about a demon called Hulu.
Yeah, just scare them away from Hulu onto your streaming service. Well, this $1.8 million at the time was pretty unheard of. What was certainly unheard of was almost half of that advertising budget went into advertising on television. That was like something no one had ever done before.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, the film's budget, like I said, was $9 million. So 20-ish percent of that went to just advertising.
That's awesome.
That's a huge chunk of that, man. When you see movie blockbusters these days, you see all sorts of tie-ins. You see action figures, blankets, fruit snacks, cereals.
Oh, yeah.
McDonald's commemorative plates. They don't do those anymore. But like, you get apps now. You used to have like a video game with all the blockbuster releases. Now you just have a dumb $2 app on your phone. Pretty much anything you can think of had a Jaws tie-in. So, of course, they had beach towels. Because who wants to go to the beach and think about the shark on their towel? Just go to the theater and watch Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
Spooked. They had shark tooth necklaces, of course. They had like hobby models and kits and stuff. They made water guns, clothing, cups. Ideal Toys made a board game out of it where you would go on.
How did sharks feel about this?
We'll save that for the end of the episode.
Okay.
There was a big protest from the land sharks. Just kidding. Sharks kind of got a bad rap because of this movie.
Yeah.
When you really think about it.
Didn't they get a bad rap? And then like, did people hunt them more because of the film?
No, I think people hunt sharks because of shark fin soup, which is a delicacy in an Asian country. That's the main reason that they're hunted, I think.
That's bad.
It is bad. But my favorite thing that they tied in was ice cream flavors. And the reason I love this is because I came across three flavor names. One was vanilla.
Yeah.
The other was jawberry. And the last one was sharklet.
Sharklet.
That's like right down our alley. There's also this genius idea. These guys were incredibly smart with how they did this. So they had a couple preview screenings or test screenings just to see how people would react to it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Universal decided to preview Jaws at Long Beach, California.
Didn't they put tubes in the water? And wasn't there something about that?
Oh, I've never heard that.
I think that might have been a recent like gimmicky thing where they had a screening of Jaws recently. I saw a Facebook invite where you had to watch in the beach.
You were in the pool. Yeah.
It was in the ocean.
Was it in the ocean?
Mm-hmm. You get a tube and you float in the ocean.
Yeah, that was recent. But no, they did their test screening at Long Beach, California. So if you're going to try to scare people off the beaches, what better place to do it than California?
That's bad.
The last thing...
Home of Jacori and Arthur.
Huh?
They lived in that state.
Yeah. Hi, Jacori and Arthur. Friends of the show. Come back. We miss you. Anyway, the last thing they did that no one was doing at the time was a nationwide release. So you think of how movies are released today. It's kind of the opposite of how it was back then. So today, if you have a smaller film, it's released in like select cities,
yeah,
and then maybe they'll go to other select cities later. usually it's not going to get a nationwide release, but all the summer blockbusters, they're released across the country same day.
Nice. Yeah, I knew nationwide was on my side.
Yeah. Mayhem. That's one of their ads, right? I don't know. Back in the day, though, they did what they called block booking, which is maybe where the term blockbuster came from. We'll get there, where there was a few select cities where they would release the movie first and, like, block by block, depending on how well the movie did, then it would grow outward. Some movies had nationwide releases, but not a lot, and Jaws was one of those. And basically from then on out, nationwide releases were a huge thing because it was very successful. And thanks to this genius marketing team, people were lining up from the theater to go see this thing.
Would you say around the block?
They were careening around the block.
Wow.
They were destroying the cement underneath, busting that block.
That's, I don't know if that's the thing.
But... Oh, well, it's probably not. Okay. So I wondered where the term blockbuster came from, because it was a term before this movie came out. The original usage was...
Tetris.
No, Tetris was after this movie was released, I think, like 80s or something.
Okay.
It wasn't Tetris. It was used to describe bombs, because they would say that the bomb was capable of blockbusting. So that's usually where it was used. RKO, which had a bunch of like horror movies and stuff, began using it in 1943 to describe films. To me, like, a few other people used it as well, but to me it seemed like it was more about the energy of the film, or what you could expect of the film. Like, one tagline said a film hits the heart like a 2-ton blockbuster. So it was talking about the bomb. It wasn't talking about...
Wow. Think about how much language changes.
Isn't it crazy?
Where we could say, that movie bombed.
Yeah.
Or, that movie was bomb.
Yeah, but the original term of blockbuster was literally a bomb.
Yeah.
We just love using bomb terminology to describe things. I don't know what's up with that. It also used to be used to describe the potential a film had. This is possibly one of the origins of the phrase. So, comparing it to a bomb ready to explode meant that it had a lot of potential and could bust a block. The other thing, though, one of the less likely origins of the phrase was that block booking. So if the movie did really well, like, they would book one block at a time. But if it did well, then it would start, like, busting at the seams, and you'd have to quickly book it for other theaters around the blocks.
Yeah.
So
sounds like an old timey 1940s phrase, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Blockbuster.
It's the blockbuster.
Thank you.
So, since then, movie producers have really wanted to cash in on the success of Jaws, and that was in 1975. What really helped solidify the summer blockbuster were the other blockbusters to be released after it. So, in 1977, the biggest blockbuster was, of course...
E.T.
Well, that is on this list.
Okay.
That's 1982. In 1977, 2 years after Jaws, was the first Star Wars movie.
Yep.
The year after that was Grease, which we all know and love because John Travolta. In 1980, we had the second Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back. Year after that, we had the first Indiana Jones movie. The year after that, we had E.T. And then the year after that, we had the third Star Wars, The Return of the Jedi. And the list goes on and continues until today. So if Jaws certainly started it, but all of these other movies just solidified the term and the industry that we had. We just now have summer blockbusters. It's just a thing that we have to deal with now. We have to find time to find a babysitter for our daughter so we can go see the new Avengers movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, everyone does that, yeah.
Yeah, every single person. Isn't it weird just like how a couple dudes filming on a boat in the middle of the ocean changed how we see movies, have our entire movie-going experience?
Yeah, that's how it always goes.
Always? It's always just some dudes on a boat in the middle of the ocean
Every time you change an industry. Unless, you know, you get
the
some dudes on a boat, write a satire article about daylight savings time.
Yeah, I guess he did change some things too. Before we go to our break, I got some figures together. I wanted to go over the 5 highest growing blockbusters and the biggest blockbuster flops.
Cool. Okay.
So,
hold my hand, Green Lantern.
It's not on this list.
All right.
But there is a what's-his-face movie on this list?
Ryan Reynolds.
He is on this list, but not from Green Lantern. So the 5th highest grossing blockbuster, not including this year because this year is not done, is Avengers Age of Ultron.
Ew, gross.
What?
Highest gross.
Oh, got it. So that made... I won't go into the numbers. You can look them up if you want.
What?
Oh, fine. It was $459 million.
Good. I feel satisfied now.
Number 4 was Finding Dory, which I was kind of surprised to see on this list.
Yeah.
That was in 2016. That made $486 million. Number 3 was Dark Knight. Everyone remembers that.
Uh-huh.
That's like the oldest one on this list. That was 2008 and made $533 million. I might have these out of order because the next one is less than that unless I typoed it. Next on that is Avengers 2012. I must have got the number wrong because I know it was higher than Dark Knight. And then number one, do you know what it is?
Of all time.
So far.
Of all time so far.
Yeah. Summer blockbusters.
I mean, I'm not including future time, Nicholas, into the calculation. It's going to be so far.
Jurassic World.
What?
Yeah, in 2015 made $652.3 million.
What?
Right?
Where did Black Panther land on this?
Wasn't in the top 10, I can tell you that.
Jeez.
The most recent movie was number 11. It was Wonder Woman. I don't know how much that made, because I'm just working from memory here. But the biggest blockbuster flops, my friend. Do you remember The Adventures of Pluto Nash?
Yep.
That's number five. It lost $113 million.
I'm not convinced it was a bad film. I don't remember anything about it except for it had Eddie Murphy.
I remember that it had Hillary Clinton on the $1 million bill.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I mean, people would be very conflicted about that today.
Yeah, very. Number four was R.I.P.D. That's the Ryan Reynolds movie. Oh, do you remember that one?
Yeah.
It had the Big Lebowski in it, too.
He had to exist as a dead boy and solve crime.
I think that's the only one on our list that the Flophouse has covered.
R.I.P.D.?
Yeah. Flophouse is a great podcast. They don't need our help, but you should go listen to it if you don't. They lost $114 million, so just one more million than The Adventures of Pluto Nash. Number three, 2011, Cowboys and Aliens.
Oh, man.
All of these movies have just become memes, except for the next one. Cowboys and Aliens lost $120 million. Number two is John Carter in 2012. Yep, that look on your face.
I'm trying to remember what it is.
It's like John Carter of Mars or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Isn't he like a gladiator?
Something like that.
It looked like the movie Gladiator, but in space.
But in space. That lost $140 million. Number one. Do you have any guesses?
So this movie, whatever this movie is, lost the most movie money.
Yes, according to this article I found on whatculture.com.
Does it have anything to do with superheroes?
No.
All right, I don't know.
Here's a hint. Johnny Depp.
Pirates of the Caribbean 7.
No, but that was on many lists.
Yeah.
Whatever the newest one was, it was on many lists, but not this list.
Okay.
Racism.
Oh, yeah, second the one where he's a little Native American boy.
Yes, Lone Ranger.
Okay.
Lost $160 million.
Ugh.
That's like an entire film's budget that they lost.
There's another really good film where
he
played a similar thing, but it was like cool.
Was it
good?
Black.
I'm going to look it up real quick because
something
as problematic as he is these days, I did like that film.
Was it the one where he's a mobster?
Mm-mm.
Well, you're going to have to tell me. While you're looking that up, let's take a break, and when we come back, we can just quickly go over some of our listeners' favorite blockbusters of all time. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Where can people find us, John?
You can find us on StrangerSocial.com or your podcast app, but we're not really going to be there. It's just going to be like the remnants of our audio voices.
Yeah,
if you want to find
experience
us, you got to find us on Facebook.
Yeah, facebook.com/group/StrangerStill. It's the best place to interact with us and let us know what you want
to
hear.
If you go to our site, if you go to StrangerSocial.com, click the Facebook button.
All of the links are there. If you want to help us out, we're on a network. It's called The Flying Machine. There's a ton of great shows on the network. And we have a Patreon on there, as John mentioned before. If you want to help us launch our
video format,
then you can kick us a little bit of cash on there.
Mm-hmm. Or hand it. I don't know.
Whatever. I just give it to us.
Not a soccer player.
You're not a soccer. While you're there, you should also check out the Flying Machine content channel. You just search for Flying Machine on iTunes and find it. It's kind of like how would you describe the content channel?
It's a mix match of all the best creative brain energy put into an audio experience.
Yeah. So it's one of the hosts of the network talking about movies or games, or they may write a short story and read it on there. And it comes out once a month, and there's 3 episodes up right now, and they're all amazing.
Yeah.
Last month, Malcolm talked about Star Wars and how to make a good Star Wars prequel.
Yeah, they're super, super polished.
Yes. And the other thing, too, about that, though, is donate to our Patreon. If we get enough patrons, it'll be a twice-monthly thing. So if you want to hear more of that content, become a patron.
Yep.
The end. That's all you need to do. Super easy. Jerk.
Yeah,
do
you, it. You dummy.
Also, if you want to leave us a review on iTunes, that would super help us out, and we'll read it on the air. Because we have a new review, John.
Look at this.
Look at this. It happens.
Listen to it.
It's 5 stars.
Wow, that's a good amount.
And it came from your brain on facts.
Okay.
Which there is a podcast out there called Your Brain on Facts.
So let's assume it's them and give them a plug.
I assume that it is them and you should go listen to that podcast. I know I'm going to.
We like facts here.
We do like facts, and they said nice things about us. They titled it Part-Time Geniuses Without the Ads, which is really flattering. They said, this next part's not as flattering, but they saved it at the end. They said, I was worried this podcast was going to be fatuous and goofy, but it's actually a match for part-time genius,
mm-hmm.
but without all the ads. Keep it up.
Nice try. So it sounds like we're full-time geniuses then.
We are.
I get it, Nick.
Get it, Nick. So you should do that. But John,
I'm still here.
You didn't go anywhere. I closed my eyes for a second. I think it's called blinking. I heard
it's called something. I don't know. Your daughter's learning it.
Yeah,
perception something.
We asked our listeners what their favorite summer blockbusters were.
Mm-hmm.
I want to share some of these with our audience. The first one we had was from Hillary. She, fittingly enough, said that Jaws was her favorite, and also the 1989 Batman with Jack Nicholson as the Joker. She shared a tattoo of her Joker tattoo.
Oh, yeah, that's rad.
Yeah. The next one on here, I've seen so many posts about this movie lately, and I have no idea why, which is Mystery Men from Stella.
Yeah, we've been talking about it every episode.
We talk about it so much, and then all of a sudden I saw like 3 articles on Facebook about it. I love that movie.
I'm going to watch it tonight.
You can borrow it. I have it over there.
I'm going to take it from your house and watch it.
Do it.
On my iMac that doesn't have a DVD player.
I thought about taking it to Minnesota, but if you're going to watch it, you watch it. Maddie Rendelick from our previous episode said, My Beautiful Laundrette. I don't
you're
know what that is.
Just too fancy.
Or Tu Wong Fu Thanks for Everything.
1995.
You like that one.
You're the Dead Man.
Oh, I don't know what any of those mean. Tammy said National Lampoon's Vacation. That's a very good one.
Michaela says Heavyweights, Friday the 13th, and Steel Magnolias.
Yeah, those are solid.
Which is also my favorite beginning to any film, the Steel Magnolias logo, because they put out good stuff.
Oh, do they?
So does Focus Features.
Oh, okay. I don't know these things. Matt said Finding Nemo. Jason, good old Jason Lee here. He says that basically all the blockbuster movies are superhero movies, so maybe Captain America, Civil War, or The Avengers and Infinity Wars. Jimmy says Terminator 2.
Yeah, Peggy's got Deadpool 2, which I would back that. I had a lot of fun with that.
That movie, like, I love that movie because it's not... I think it's better than... Did we talk about this on the show?
No.
I think it's better than the first one.
I do, because
jokes, like, actually stand on their own for once, whereas in the first movie, they're just all references. It's like Family Guy humor.
Yeah.
It's just references to other stuff. Whereas this movie, like, had jokes you could say outside the movie.
Yeah. It was just, like... maximum fun level of stuff.
Yeah.
Not to plug any other networks.
No. This is the network.
This is the only one that exists. L says... Jurassic okay, Park. So there are
You're just going to actually read it. Go for it.
She says Jurassic Park, Indiana Jones, but Jurassic Park the most.
So... Jurassic Park is so good. I will always love the first Jurassic Park just for the Tyrannosaurus Rex scene when they're in the rain and it's like stomping on the car and stuff. She said as far as like recent summer blockbusters, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2,
yep.
Shrek, Pacific Rim. That's a wide breadth of movies there, Al.
No, they're in the same universe.
I guess so. You can find those connecting threads.
Don't you remember that weird smooch scene with Harry and Hermione Meanie?
They didn't smooch, did they?
In the clouds, they did.
Oh.
It was a fake out.
Oh.
Shrek's in that. Sharon. You gotta look in the clouds.
Sharon says Independence Day. Jay says Star Wars is a strong contender, but The Dark Knight, Iron Man, Infinity Wars are monumental cultural events.
And then Jason came back again. Again. Pacific Rim.
He said it's dumb and fun,
yeah.
Which is like all you can really ask for. It doesn't have to be. This is what I'm learning in my old age, is that something doesn't have to be quote unquote good to be good.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't have to be like perfectly made. It doesn't have to be the perfect script. Like this is a weird comparison, but Sonic Mania, mm-hmm. I have no idea if it's a good game, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And that's good enough for me.
Yep. And you didn't grow up with the Genesis.
No, I did not.
And I did. And I get nostalgia from it, but it feels new too.
Yeah. For me, this is like completely new because I only played it at my friend's house. Like the originals, but I never like sat down and beat a Sonic game.
Yeah.
So sometimes you just need to have fun.
So you don't know
and
the...
And it's okay to have fun.
Just the real quick tangent of me calling my sister in the room because I'm stuck and I need her to fly as Tails and pick me up to a ledge and it takes 8 tries because she's like 6 at the time.
Yeah. Poor
Lindsay.
I was going to call her a little girl, but that felt weird. So I didn't. I'm still Nick.
I'm still John.
And this is Stranger Still.
give you the incredible flying machine.